You watch me walk through hell. Now watch me walk up at it.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and as always you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble. The NBA, we're 3 days in. Every team now has seen the court at least once. We've got a feel for things. We've got the overreactions flying all over the place in fantasy land. We've got three games from Thursday to break down, three highly uncompetitive games. And we have got a full 10-game slate for Friday to preview. So
let's get to it.
Let's get to it. Indeed, that is always a really, really good option. We will start with, of course, the monstrous line of the night. And it goes to Blakey Griffin of the Los Angeles Clippers, who dropped in 29 points. He also had 12 rebounds. I guess the more surprising part of that line is not the 29 points, not the 12 rebounds. It's the fact that he drilled three triples and the fact that he also had two steals. He added three assists to that. He was 12 of 23 from the field. And he was 2 of 2 from the line. I've said this many times throughout the preseason that he does have top 20 upside for this season. The injury risk is a real thing, but his ability to take big steps forward without Chris Paul around, it was always something that had a chance of happening. I thought he was a strong third-round guy. If you got him in the fourth, even better. And got a real chance to step forward. And he started things out on the right foot. Now, we do have to remember that we're talking about a matchup against the Lakers, who that over-under of 33.5 just looks bafflingly high. They were horrendous in this game, but not the worst team on the night, I didn't think. With Griffin, he just puts up numbers, and he's going to continue to do that through the majority of this season. The waiver wire line of the night goes to CJ Miles of the Toronto Raptors. Miles dropped in 22 points, including 6 triples. He had 5 rebounds, no assists, no steals, and no blocks. 7 of 12 from the field and 2 of 2 from the line. He got really red hot in this one. Norm Powell got the start over him. Now, Miles didn't play huge amounts of minutes. He just got really hot with his threes. And this is something we've seen CJ Miles do so many times. He can get really, really hot and really streaky. He could hit 15 threes in a week. And then he could go 2 weeks where he hits 3 combined threes. He is not a must-add sort of a player. He's a streaming sort of a player, so a great stream option for today. You needed those threes. He normally gets you some steals as well. A decent point source off the bench. He can do all those sort of things, but in terms of his consistent value, a guy like Terry Ross in Orlando provides a similar sort of skill set, a similar statistical line than CJ Miles, but it's probably a better long-term option. Norm Powell only played 25 minutes, and people will look at that and go, yeah, what's happening there, minute split. I think it was more a fact that the game was an absolute blowout, and Norm just didn't play. He had 25 minutes about halfway through the third quarter, and then didn't play really down the end, and that's totally fine. As the Raptors got a better look at their bench unit, I'm not worried really about Norm. I think that he should be owned in all 12-team leagues, definitely ahead of CJ, but CJ does have that fantastic stream ability for that three-point shooting in particular, and a really big night from him in a blowout against the Chicago Bulls. The young gun of the night goes to one of those Chicago Bulls, Lauri Markkanen, who in his first NBA game had 17 points, including 2 triples. He had 8 rebounds, he blocked a shot, and he was 5 of 12 from the field and 5 of 6 from the free throw line. We know that Nikola Mirotic is not back for a couple of months. We know that Bob Portis is suspended for a pitiful 7 more games. Markkanen is going to get those minutes. He played 34 minutes in this one. He should be owned in all leagues at this point. If he's not, have a look, see who you can move to grab him. But he should be owned. And you know, while I'm big on Mirotic, and I think Mirotic is a good player, the fact that Markkanen's starting and he's played well, to me, that means that I don't think Mirotic is going to get that starting job back. Now, he might cut into Markkanen's minutes and he won't play 34 a night. And you'll see Markkanen maybe play a little bit at backup center as well, which would be good over Chris Felizio. But I think you might find it hard for Mirotic to get to the 25 minutes. Maybe he's only a 23-minute-a-game guy, and Markkanen plays, you know, a lot of 4 and a lot of 5 for this team and hovers around that 30-minute mark for big, big chunks of this season. That's the way I'd be looking at it. So you should be going and grabbing Lowry now as a pretty comfortable, I would say, top 120 guy, really comfortable top 120 guy, and a really decent chance of being a top 100, top 80 player for this season. So he is your young gun of the night. The dud of the night goes to Timmy Hardaway Jr. of the New York Knicks. 8 points, including 2 triples. Only the 1 assist, 0 rebounds. He went full Nick Young. 0 steals, 0 blocks, 3 of 10 from the field, and no attempts at the free throw line. There's a couple of things here. This game was a disgusting blowout. We saw that. So his minutes were limited for that reason. He also had Andre Robertson guarding him a lot of the time. A lot of people, oh man, I drafted Tim Hardaway. I'm pissed. Yeah, it's bad. Yeah, it's a bad game. It was a shit matchup, and these things happen with these guys. Hardaway was really good down the stretch for the Hawks last season. He will be better than this. He will get more assists. He's not going to be a high rebound guy, but he will score more. He will take more shot attempts. He'll hit more of them, and he'll be fine for that sort of late round, decent assist, points, 3 points sort of a player, which is what he is. I wouldn't be too overly concerned about Timmy Hardaway based on this game. Of course, it's not great to see a guy that you spent maybe an 8th round pick on. Maybe you went 9th. Whatever way you went on it, it's not great to see this sort of immediate return out of a guy that you did invest a decent pick on. But it's definitely not the end of the world to see him do that. And again, he only played the 29 minutes. I think you can expect 4 or 5, maybe 6 extra minutes per game. But who knows? When literally the worst coach in the NBA, but Earl Watson's just tapping me on the shoulder, going, mate, don't forget about me. The top 2 worst coach in the NBA is coaching you. Lots of dumb shit can happen quite often with these guys. But Hardaway is going to be better than this. He will shoot better. He will contribute more with the assists. He'll get some steals. He'll get his points up. No need to panic. But if he gets dropped, I'm all over it. I would go and add him. And I feel pretty good about him ending this season. That's the word I'm looking for. Ending this season as a top 100 talent. Let's move on and break down these games now in that bit of extra detail that I do enjoy doing on this show. The first game was the Chicago Bulls and the Toronto Raptors.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again.
Ah, yes, the Chicago Bulls that scored. Did they even get over 5 points in that second quarter? They were absolutely putrid. They ended up only losing by 16 points, but actually, sorry, it was adjusted to 17 points. A 3 was dropped down to a 2, but man, they just looked disgusting. The offense is all over the place. Justin Holiday was just jacking shots. Robin Lopez just turning into Brook Lopez pretty much and taking as many shots as he could. It was just disgusting. Once again, the shittest coaches are the ones that tell the most lies in what they say. Oh, Ryan Arcidakono, he's going to be our backup point guard. Yeah, 5 minutes in, and then he was done. Like, he played in the first quarter, and that was it. Then Kay Felder replaced him as the backup point guard, and that's fair enough. Yeah, Felder's probably a better player, but just don't go and pronounce such bullshit when you're going to give up on it literally after a quarter. Hoiberg has no ability to stick with anything that he does. Is he married? He probably is, but how he managed to stick with his missus for more than a day is an absolute mind-blowing surprise, because he can't stick with one single thing. And I'm not saying that Arcidakono should have stayed in there because he was killing it, but don't go out and say things one day and then literally 5 minutes you go, you know what? Nah, everything that I've thought for the preseason is completely wrong. I've been thinking this and I've been saying it, but give me 5 minutes and I'm done. Like, have some conviction. And this is the bullshit that Hoiberg did with Mirotić last season, and just anything that chopping and changing with Grant and with Carter Williams and with Payne and whoever. Oh, you're the starter? Nah, actually now you're the third string point guard. Just that constant, like, have some courage in your conviction. And he just appears like a guy that has no courage in his conviction anyway. Another guy that's tapping me on the left shoulder this time saying, mate, don't forget about me when you're talking about worst coach in the NBA. But let's look at the individual performances. Lopez, 18-8 with a steal, tons of shots, jacking long twos, even attempted a 3. He's going to have some decent value until he gets traded or value minimized by the return of Mirotić, who then forces Markkanen to play a little bit more at center. But he should be owned if he's not. Justin Holiday also should be. 15-4-2. 4 triples, a steal and a block, but just out of control with the shooting. He attempted 12 threes. That is a shit ton out of his 16 shots. He didn't hit many shots in total. He only hit 5 field goals for the day, and only one of those was a 2-pointer. But there's value in him. I spoke about Markkanen already. Jaren Grant played 27 as a starting point guard, and you would have hoped, with literally no other point guard of any NBA caliber on the roster, that he would have played a little bit more than that. Only 27. 7-2-7 with 2 steals, though, is still enough to have decent value, at least until Chrissy Dunn returns. Dunn is going to have that chance to take the starting job back, but A, he is not good. Neither is Grant, so it's going to be a roller coaster all season, but Grant has that short-term value. And I was really impressed with Denzel Valentine. 12 points, 4 triples in 26 minutes. He didn't do anything else, but he can handle the ball a bit. Probably more a 14-team league guy, but does have some 12-team value. Paulie Zipser, who the Raptors announcers called Powell Zipser. And I feel like I'm going to get into a rant about announcers today, because they were absolutely just horrifically bad. And how these dickheads, like Stacey King, continue to have a job announcing the NBA when pretty much every person in the entire NBA or entire United States would be killing for that job, when they just make constant incorrect pronouncements all the time without any skerrick of research, is just phenomenal to me. Chris Felizio had a potential jump shot at the foul line at one point, kicked it out to Denzel Valentine for an open corner three, and Stacey King's got, nah, you can't throw that pass out there, you've got to take that shot. Or how about you throw it to the best shot in the game, which is a wide open corner three, to a guy who can shoot rather than a plotting Brazilian who doesn't have a jump shot. Either or. Quincy Pondexter, the man who was almost literally dead, is back in action. Also, shout out to Stacey King for calling him Poindexter. You might want to learn a bloke's name. Maybe. Just maybe, if that's your job. You might want to have some sort of inkling of knowing that. 12 minutes for Pondexter, 8-2 with a pair of steals. He looked so slow, and that's fair enough. He hasn't played in so long, but he just looked completely out of shape. I imagine he won't be in the rotation most nights. Well, Kay Felder dished 6 assists and 6 points in that 16 minutes. Deeper leagues, 30s, 20s. You grab him for this short term, but he looked okay out there. He was one of those guys who translated really well coming out of college, but obviously never got that opportunity playing for the Cleveland Cavaliers. For the Raptors, how's my boy Jonas Valanciunas? 31 minutes, 23 and 15, 2 steals. I don't know how long I've been saying this. Pretty much as long as this podcast has been on the air, I've been saying this, that if he has 30 minutes a game, he is a top 40 player. Unfortunately, Dwayne Casey either doesn't listen to this podcast or doesn't want to do what I tell him to do, because it has never happened. Maybe I'll make a bold pronouncement. Jonas Valanciunas is better than Serge Ibaka. Is that bold? Is that a hot take? I don't know. But Ibaka has looked terrible since the playoffs. He looked terrible in the preseason. And he didn't look good in this one. They continually went with Ibaka at center last season, and it limited Valanciunas once he arrived to like 24 minutes a night. But they went with Valanciunas down the stretch here at center. Not that they needed to, because it wasn't a crunch time sort of situation, but that's massive from Jonas. So really, let's hope he can keep this up, because the top 50 season beckons if he plays 28 minutes a night. It is a big stretch at this point, but it'll be interesting to see how Casey handles that. As for Ibaka, 8-4 with a pair of threes and a pair of steals. So not a complete write-off, but just, I don't know, he just doesn't look right at all. Kyle Lowry, 12-4-9 in 31 minutes. You might be a little bit disappointed with him and DeMar, who had 11-6-5, but they didn't need to exert themselves. I think they scored 3 points in the first half between them, or at least a big chunk of that first half, because the other players were just killing it, including Valanciunas and Norm and CJ. So decent numbers. Impressive that DeRozan had 5 assists and he was actually passing the ball to Valanciunas, and that actually might make this Raptors team more diverse on offense, which is something they need. My boy DeLon Wright, someone who I thought could be a big breakout guy this season, was amazing. And again, we have to all put the caveat that it's against the Bulls. And I can say that for pretty much any of these games on Thursday. DeLon had 13 points in 23 minutes. He had 5 assists. He had a steal. It hurts even more that I wanted the Bulls to take DeLon when they took Bobby Portis. And now, yeah, Portis is sitting right at the top of the ship bloke list, and DeLon is out here killing the Bulls. Really, really good stuff. His assists and steal combination does make him 12-team valuable in certain situations. Big Norm Powell had 15-4 with 3 triples in a start. He does lack the peripherals a bit, but his ability to get scoring punch makes him a 12-team league guy. Probably the most impressive thing, apart from DeLon, apart from DeMar passing, apart from Jonas Valanciunas, was the fact that OG Anunoby not only played when he was expected to be out till probably January, that he played, but he looked brilliant. 9 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. He didn't get any of those defensive numbers, but this guy's got top 100 upside, not this season, but at some point in the next 3 seasons, I believe, for his ability to be a 1.5 steals, 1.5 blocks sort of guy. And if you can add any semblance of offense, which looked not too bad in this one, and his passing was much improved, in the top 50 beckons for OG. So he is definitely a guy to really put a decent amount of stock in from a dynasty point of view. And the fact that he's back and looks athletic and not limited at all by the ACL, you should be all in on OG Anunoby. The New York Knickerbockers and the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Percentages.
Let's start with the good. Kristaps played 38 minutes, 31-12, 2 triples and a block. 44% from the field on 25 attempts, 7 of 9 from the line. You can't complain about that as a Porzingis owner. You grabbed him in the mid-teens range of a draft. You should be really happy with that. He took on the extra responsibility. He looked good. He wants to be defensive player of the year. He's not going to be it, but he was pretty good defensively. Yeah, good stuff all around from Porzingis. The rest of the action from this game, the rest of this team, Jeff Hornacek is horrendous. He has been a bad and confusing coach for a long time, and a lot of it you could think, oh, maybe Phil Jackson's just going over and giving him the old whisper in the ear and saying, Jeff, fuck it up, please. Fuck it up. But maybe Jeff just wants to do that on his own. The fact... Now, I'm not the greatest Bill Hernan Gomez fan. I've been on record. I think that Bill Hernan Gomez is solid. I feel like he's getting... probably some unnecessary reach arounds from a lot of people. I think he's good. I think he's solid. I think he's young. I think he can work well with Porzingis. I also think he's inferior to Enes Kanter, and I do love Kylo Quinn as well as a player. But not playing him at all in this game, like completely taking him out of the rotation, was nonsensical in my opinion. I think Kanter should start. I think it should be like a 25-23 split. But I'm all for Kylo Quinn not being in the rotation. As much as I think he can be a contributor, you want Hernan Gomez in that role. I think Hernan Gomez is an inferior offensive talent to Kanter. He's an inferior offensive rebounder and rebounder in general to Enes. He is a marginally superior defender, but that's not saying much. But the fact that Hornacek can come out and tell Hernan Gomez that he's out of the rotation, and then the reason being because of defense, it makes no sense whatsoever. Because we know what Kanter's like defensively. Now, this was always going to be the concern. And it's going to get worse when Joakim Noah comes back. It's going to get worse for these guys. So a lot of people are like, oh yeah, don't drop Will yet. Don't drop Billy at this point yet. I'm real close to it. Because there's four centers. I think his upside is significantly limited. We saw it last year. That even in those games down the stretch, he wasn't playing 30 minutes a night. He played 26, 27. And now with Kanter there as a better option... and another body, and then Noah returning. What's Bill's upside here? Is it actually big? Look, I would drop probably Gorgui Dieng ahead of Bill, even though I'm a huge Dieng fan. It's all about situation. This situation looks terrible. And I imagine for the short term that Hernan Gomez is going to be out of the rotation at least for the next week, maybe the next two. Nothing is set in stone, according to Hornacek, including his job security. But I still think he's not going to come out and go, oh, well, next game, old cock, you're out, and Bill, you're in. Although any center that would have a good game for the Knicks last year, the next game they were out of the rotation. So that is why that constant back and forth bullshit, especially now that he's got four options and his best center plays power forward, that gives me a real degree of pause here. So if there is a hot free agent out there, if Lauri Markkanen is around, if Larry Nance is around, I'd consider it. I don't know if I'd do it 100%, but I don't think Hernan Gomez's upside is all that high where I have to go, you know what, I'm really going to drop a top 50 upside here. Maybe as soon as Kanter was traded, I was like, I'm done on Will. And I drafted him in a couple of leagues and I was pissed with it. But I had this feeling this is what was going to go down, and here we are. Doug McDermott surprised everyone by having 4 assists and 3 rebounds. He had 4 points in his 24 minutes, but we're talking about him as a deep league guy. And the other great move from Big Jeff Hornacek, I've got to drop this one in.
My name is Jeff.
Frank Ntilikina, lottery pick that was selected ahead of not only Donovan Mitchell or Zach Collins or maybe not Donovan Mitchell, but of course, the big one, Big Dennis Smith Jr. You've got to have Frank. You've got to have him as your third point guard. When you've got the opportunity to start Ramon Sessions and Rugged Ronnie Baker, have them got those two guys ahead of Frank, I think you've got to take every opportunity to make sure you do that. Ntilikina, for his part, looked not good. He came in, he took 2 shots, he airballed them both. He only played 8 minutes, including some junk time at the end. But what is Ron Baker doing for anybody's anything? What's the point? Seriously, look, what is the point? Baker played 23 minutes and had 6, 2, and 4 and had 3 rugged and gritty steals as he is wont to do. But if you're not going to develop your backup point, him as a backup point guard to give him the starting job this year, then what are you doing? What are you doing with your life, Hornacek? It just is bullshit. Sessions played only 21 minutes. He had 3 and 2 with the triple one. Yeah, you don't want him in a 12, you don't want Frank in a 12, you clearly don't want Rugged in the 12, even though he did play the majority of those minutes. Courtney Lee had 9 and 2 with 3 assists. That's just what he is. He's a 14-team low upside guy that maybe even is a 16-team guy, even though he started. Mick Beasley sprained his ankle 30 seconds into his tenure as a Knick. He hit a jumper, 100% from the field, no structural damage, but he's in a walking boot, so I'd imagine that he misses a little bit of time there. For the Thunder, let's go through the big guns. Russell Westbrook had a triple-double, 21, 10, and 16 assists, 1 block, big field goal percentage, huge numbers. I was all for taking him in the top 2 or top 3 of drafts. Yeah, this is why. Paulie George, 28 and 6 with 6 triples, a steal, and a block. Big numbers for him as well. I was all for taking him in the second or start of the third, mainly the second round. And Melo was also good. 22 points with 3 triples, 2 steals, 2 blocks for Carmelo. And he provided some decent value in that 50 to 60 range. Steven Adams, 12-5 with 5 steals and 3 blocks. Perfect 5-from-5 from the field. Now, one of the detriments of Adams' fantasy game has been the fact that he gets no defensive numbers. So he came out with a combined 8 steals and blocks, which is obviously huge. And it's obviously something that won't be able to continue. But he is going to put up, I think, some more block numbers this season, hopefully, and be a decent option. But I think this could be close to high watermark. But apart from that, this rest of the team is shithouse. There is nothing for standard league fantasy guys. Abrines hit a 3, that's cool. Jeremy Grant had 5, 3, and 2 in his 21 minutes, but we're talking 16-team league guys. Everything is going to be concentrated in PG, Russ, and Mallow, with Adams getting the junk after that. Pat Patterson played just 7 minutes as he returns from his knee injury. Nothing too much to be concerned about there, but everyone else, there's just nothing to really look at from a fantasy point of view from those other Thunder players. The last game of the night was the Los Angeles Lakers. They hosted the Los Angeles Clippers in the same building, of course. We talked about Blake Griffin. DeAndre Jordan played 32 minutes and grabbed 24 rebounds. He had 14 points and he was totally fine. Didn't have his 70% from the field, but it was a perfect 4-of-4 from the line. So now we've had DeAndre Jordan and Andre Drummond combined to go 6-of-6 from the free throw line. And I might even throw Clint Capela in there because I believe he went 2-of-2 as well. So 3 of the biggest free throw anchors perfect from the free throw line in their first game. Of course, that won't continue. Pat Bev, he started in this game alongside Miloš Teodosic. Neither one was spectacular, but seriously, they didn't have to be. This was a pasting early on. Beverly was just right, as Stephen A. Smith would say, he was getting into Lonzo Ball's ass.
Giggity!
And that's cool. But I love Beverly's feistiness. I love him getting up and really giving it to him. I love when he does it to anyone. I know some people really dislike Pat Beverly. I love him. I am all for him. Really, really excited to see him play. Yeah, this is what he does. 10 points, 3 boards, 2 triples and 2 steals. That's solid low-end value. Whereas Miloš only had 6 points, but did have 6 assists and had 2 threes. And this brings me to my next point. Chris Webber. This is a broader point about sports media over in the US, in Australia as well. Just because you're an ex-player doesn't mean A, that you know how to articulate yourself, or B, that you've got any bloody idea what you're talking about in any sense at all. Do one skerrick of research. Do one little part of anything. How can these people be so consistently bad at their jobs? Reggie Miller, Charles Barkley, Chris Webber, Mark Jackson, I haven't even heard him yet, but like, these people are so horrendous. Yeah, a couple of gems from the announcers on this one. Chris Webber, Brook Lopez hit his standard free throw line floater that he does all the time. And Webber said, like, when you can't hit threes, that's what you got to do. You've got to go. So when you're not able to hit threes, you got to go in and bang in the paint and hit a skyhook. Does he not know that Lopez hit like 200 threes last season? Maybe he didn't hit 200, but he hit a lot. I think he hit over 2 a game, so maybe it was 200. Does he not know that? Or even Marv Albert, who's we know that he's good, but when he comes out and says that Miloš Teodosic multiple times is not a good shooter, when Miloš has averaged 39% from 3 for the past 6 seasons over in Europe, it's baffling. And I know that Miloš had a couple of poor shooting nights in preseason, but doesn't mean he's a bad shooter. 6 games versus 10 years. I'll probably take the 6 games, because that's probably the way you want to go, because short, small sample sizes, reactionary comments is always the way we get around all this stuff. Miloš, yeah, he had those 6 assists. That's valuable in standard leagues. The 2 threes are nice as well, and he'll probably be a little bit better than that. Austin Rivers was his putrid self. 2 points with 2 assists and 2 steals in 26 minutes. And I say putrid from a fantasy sense. He does stuff defensively on the court, which is nice, but he is just not a fantasy guy for 12-team leagues, 1 of 11 from the field. Big Lou Williams, 12, 3, and 6 with 2 steals. He did what he did, and he's a nice 12-team league guy. Well, the Rooster did struggle, but actually filled up the box score, 11, 5, and 3, a pair of threes, a pair of steals, and a block. Well, Wes Johnson clearly in the rotation ahead of Sammy Decker after being excised so that the corpse of Paul Pierce could play last season. Johnson had 9 and 5 with 20 minutes. Watch him as a triple one stream option this season, because he can get them. He just missed out with getting the block in this game, but a triple one in 20 minutes is within the ranges of possibility for Wes this season, and that could have really interesting streamability. Shout out to my boy Sindarius Thornwell, who came in, took one shot and hit it. I think he is going to be an interesting player as long as A, he is on another team, or Doc Rivers is not the coach of the Clippers anymore. The Lakers. Brook Lopez, this is how Brook Lopez-ish can you get? 20-6 with a triple one. Like, that is as Brook Lopez as it gets. He's just going to do what he does. We had an interesting starting lineup from Luke Walton. We had Lonzo Ball, we had Brandon Ingram, and then Luol Deng was resurrected to be the starting small forward. Larry Nance at power forward and Lopez at center. There's so much for me to unpack here. The fact that Deng started and played 13 minutes, what's the point? Literally, what is the point of that? He had 2 points in those 13 minutes. No point to that whatsoever. Corey Brewer had 2 and 3 in his 16 minutes. So your geriatric small forwards didn't do a huge amount. Larry Nance over Julius Randle? Fine. Because you know what? Larry Nance is better. Well, I think he is anyway. And he clearly showed it in this one. 14 and 12 with a block. I know that one game doesn't prove it. But to me, I've said this for quite a while, that I think Nance is a better player than Randle. And I think Nance, if he's going to play 30 minutes a night and he's going to thrive next to Lopez, which I thought he'd played really well next to Brook, I think he's a 12-10 league guy because he does have that. He can score, he can do it efficiently, and he can get defensive numbers. So I think he's interesting there. We had Andrew Bogut play. Wasn't sure that would happen. 11 minutes for Bogut with 2 blocks. While Ivica Zubats was a healthy scratch, and this is something we've talked about quite a bit. I don't think Zubats is going to get huge amounts of playing time this season. As for Randle, just 18 minutes, 9 and 6. I think he got a hold, but I don't think he's good, and you're well aware of that. As for future MVP Kyle Kuzma, 8 and 4 with 2 steals and 19 minutes. If you did draft him, hold. But this is sort of what you know, I was preaching, that he's not going to do what he did in preseason in the regular season. He's just not going to do it. And we saw it here. Now, of course, I would have rather he got those minutes over Luol Deng, but I'm not the coach. And yeah, he's not as good as what the preseason may have advertised. Like, those numbers are still okay in 19 minutes, but it is going to be tougher for him to do what he did in preseason. Jordy Clarkson had a nice game, 18 and 2 with a pair of steals and threes in 23 minutes. Took a ton of shots. When Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is back, though, Clarkson is going to drop off and won't be an ownable player. Whereas Lonzo Ball, only 3 points, had 9 rebounds and 4 assists. The shot was bad. The triple one is nice. And the passing was good. I reckon he had probably maybe 4 assists that should have gone in. But the fact that the Lakers players couldn't hit shots really doomed him in that sort of a situation. So he's okay. Brandon Ingram, on the other hand, I'm not sure if he's okay. 3 of 15 from the field. Ends up the line's okay. 12 and 4 with a 0-0. 12-5-4 with a 0-0, but that shooting was horrendous. I'm just not convinced that he is good. If I did own him, I would still just hold at the moment because I'm sure he's going to get the minutes, but I'm just not convinced he's ever going to be A, a good fantasy player, or B, a good NBA player. Luke Walton came out. Tyler Ennis is our backup point guard. Until he wasn't, because Alex Caruso was the backup point guard. So that's always good, again, to have coaches who coach bad teams just make your tricky decisions, because you're really going to influence the results with all your trickery and your concealment. It's really making a big difference to everything. Caruso had 2 points and Ennis had 2 points there in his 10 minutes. I'm going to say it now. I don't think Luke Walton's a good coach. I know he had a lot of hype coming over from Golden State, didn't lose a game in that time where he was replacing Steve Kerr, but I don't think there's really been much that he's done in his time in LA that's made me go, you know what, good coach. Lots of baffling decisions with things he done. Now, I am happy with the move that he made of putting Nance in. I think that does work, but I'm not convinced that he's... Maybe it's too premature for me to say he's not a good coach. I'm just not convinced that he is a good coach at this point. There are some baffling and some concerning decisions that he does make with his rotation, especially he did it last year as well. Yeah, refused to break up his bench lineup, even though his starters would go in and get down by 20 points in 4 minutes. Got to keep the bench unit together. Yeah, that's because... So he can come out in press conference and say, we've got the best bench unit in the league. Only purpose of that, didn't win you games because you were down 20 by the time they came in. Yeah, that sort of stuff, yeah, bugged me a bit. And I'm just not sure that he is a good coach. He's not Hornacek, he's not Hoiberg, he's not Watson, but he's not good yet. We'll leave it at that for Lukey Walton. All right, that covers it for all of the action on Thursday. I'm going to transition ourselves now to talk about DFS because there are 10 games on Friday, so I'll be back in a sec. All right, guys, we are back now indeed to talk DFS action from for Friday's games. There are 10 of them, but before we do that, let's talk about the perfect DFS lineups from Thursday's action, Thursday's 3 games. On FanDuel, Russ had 53, Rugged Ronnie Baker in there with 19.4, Lou Williams at 29.6, and Jordy Clarkson at 27.4. It was a bit of a shit show in terms of just trying to work out the value on this slate. I told you there wasn't great value standing out, especially on FanDuel. Paulie George had 41.7, Porzingis had 47.9, and Griffin went for 49.9, as did Valanciunas. And the total was 345.9 for a total cost of 59,900. Over on DraftKings, DeLon Wright had 25, CJ Miles 31.25, Larry Nance 31, Blakey Griffin had 53.5, Robin Lopez 32.5, Westbrook had 60.5, Porzingis 51, and Valanciunas at 49.75 for a total of 334.5, and that cost $49,800. That is your perfect lineup from whatever day this was. My days always get confused because you know that it's a different day here for me. That was from Thursday. Now, let's talk about Friday's action. There are 10 games. Again, the pricing has been tightened up a lot on FanDuel and probably not as harsh as what it is on Thursday. DraftKings is still a bit of value, but the guys at Moneyball and DraftStars in Australia, it's loose as. There is still just... You're going to need 400s, pretty much, I reckon, to cash on Saturday on those sites. It is toned down a bit on FanDuel. Maybe we're talking 330, 320, that sort of a zone. Maybe 300 and DraftKings to 260, that sort of zone. But it's not like it was on FanDuel on those opening in that opening day. The first game of the night is the Detroit Pistons. They're taking on the Washington Wizards. The Wizards are favored by 6, and the total is a decent 210.5. We've seen the pace in the NBA be absolutely through the roof. More threes, more pace. It was a trend that we saw in preseason. It's going to continue. It happens pretty much every year. Pace and threes are going up. So much so that only one game on this slate has an over-under of less than 200. And that's the Utah-Minnesota game, which is at 199, so barely under that. So you're looking at 220 games as being the real fast ones. And anything less than 210 is probably considered a slow game now in terms of pace. Whereas before it was like over 200, you're looking good. Under 200, it's a slow one, and under 190 is real slow. But now it feels like we've moved up 5 to 10 points in that sort of estimation. As I said, the Wizards favored by 6 here. Joel Embiid, he's going to play in this one. I'm really, really confident. I think there's a chance he sits out the Saturday back-to-back. I'm not convinced of it because there was a great article by Keith Pompey talking about back-to-backs, and it's not going to be all season with the back-to-backs with Embiid. We're all fairly confident of that. It's got nothing to do with his foot at this point. It's more just the rehab from the knees and his conditioning. And I think that, again, by December, we're talking 30 minutes and no back-to-back restrictions for Embiid. They're not even restrictions. It's more just a loose plan for his minutes at this point, and that's why he played 27 in that opening night. He is going to smash through the top 15 this year. I'm very, very confident with Embiid at this point, but I'm not even sure why I'm talking about Embiid because I'm not even on that game. I just love talking about him. Let's go back to Detroit, Washington. Jason Smith is questionable with that right shoulder that caused him to leave that opening night game. If he is out, then Kelly Oubre gets a significant boost there. I think Oubre will probably play more than Smith anyway, but Smith does have some sneaky value. The good thing is it's the first game of the night, so you will be able to tell if Smith is in or out before games go. If he is out again, Oubre gets that boost. Let's talk point guards in this one. We start and we finish with Johnny Wall pretty much. 10,500 for John. He had 50 in the first game against the Sixers. I think he's a decent shot against Reggie Jackson to get to 50 again, and at 10,500, that's not bad value on a night like this in FanDuel. So, all okay for getting John at that sort of a price tag if that's the way you're looking. You got Reggie Jackson, who is priced at 5,500. He had a nice game, 34 points in the opener. The John Wall defense has been a problem for opposing point guards in the past, and I'm not sure that Reggie, given the fact that he won't play 30 minutes, is a lock to get to that number, but I don't hate him as a tournament play, whereas Ish Smith at 41 is always in play for a GPP, because if Van Gundy switches that role around and he gets 28 minutes, he could easily score 15 with 8 assists and get 3 steals, and at 4,100, that's not hard for him to really go smashing through that, but it's, of course, GPPs only. We're not looking at Timmy Frazier. The other guy that's point guard listed is Langston Galloway, who had 29 in the opener. He's at 3,800. The chances of that repeating are fairly low. Remember, Avery Bradley was limited with foul trouble, and that gave Galloway not only the extra minutes, but the extra green light in terms of shooting. But he is worth a look at that sub 4,000 price for 24-point upside, probably. Not a guarantee at 24. He's worth a look. As for Avery Bradley, 5,100, definitely a disappointing performance in the first one due to fouls, but he was efficient, and I'm all in. At 5,100 on Avery Bradley, I think that his ownership will be low. I'm finding him in cash, and I think that in tournaments, I'm ready to go with him as well. Bradley Beal, 7,800, just dropped 48 in that first game. Yep, yeah, I think that's a strong play as well for Beal. The small forwards, Stan Johnson, 4,500, he did not hit a single shot and still put up 20 points in FanDuel scoring in 40 minutes in that first game. So you would have to think he's going to hit at least one shot. Probably won't get the 4 steals, but he'll hit at least a shot. So I like him as a tournament play at 4,500. The minutes are going to be there, and I feel okay about him having a decent chance, at above 50% chance of breaking through 5X value. Otto Porter at 59, 32 points against Philly. it looked like he was on track for more than that, but that's sort of where he needs to be at that salary. I don't feel great about using Otto Porter. I just feel like he's really limited upside-wise. $6,800 for Toby Harris, who was awesome in that first game against Charlotte. He had 43 points, really was on line for more than that early on. I'm not really sure that it's a great bet, especially with the $1,200 price bump that he's suffered, whereas Oubre had 39 in that first game, and that's bumped his salary to $5,300. I'd only really be looking at Oubre if Smith happens to be sidelined at power forward. Smith at $3,600. If he is in, I feel okay about him at that price, but I don't love it for cash, more of a tournament sort of a guy. And then you've got the tackle box, John Lua at $34. I'll leave that alone. Henry Allenson, who had a pretty good game in the first one at $3,500. He dropped 22 points. There's some tournament-y-ness there. And Mick Scott, no thanks. At centre, Andre Drummond, $8,500. Almost dropped 40 despite playing only 22 minutes in the opener. Marcin Gortat, I don't think that really changes much in terms of matchup for Drummond, but I'm all there for Drummond to be used. I think he's not the best centre on the board. There's Gobert around, of course. There's other guys out there, but he's not a complete write-off. As for Gortat, you know, sensational in that first game. 46 points at 6,100, but I can pretty much guarantee you he won't grab 17 rebounds against Andre Drummond, who's one of the best rebounders in the NBA. So that lessens Gortat's appeal at 6,100. I think, to me, he's a fairly strong fade option. Let's have a look at how this looks over on DraftKings. There's much change in value. I think Stan Johnson's even better on DraftKings at 3,700, as is Drummond at 7,600, as is Wall at 9,800. All those three guys have significant value. I like Beal a lot more at 7,100. Avery Bradley is still fairly strong at 54, as is Kelly Oubre, who didn't get a $2,000 price bump, but a $600 one on DraftKings to put him at 4,400. Reggie Jackson at 54, I'm not really sure the upside there with him. Well, Ish at 41 in a similar situation to what we talked about over on FanDuel for him there. Also, let's get into the next one. It is Boston and Philadelphia, and you heard me talk about Joel Embiid already. The same stuff applies because Joel Embiid is going to play in this game and may or may not play in the Saturday game against the Raptors. He was fantastic in that first one. Jahlil Okafor, he was listed as probable for the opener due to illness, but I think he's just not going to play. He's just not going to be in the rotation. And Jaylen Brown, who is dealing with a wrist problem, I think he's going to be fine to go as well. The Sixers are actually favored here. Now, the Sixers are favored by 1.5. The total is 217.5. I know the Boston's lost their first two games and they don't have Gordon Hayward, but this feels like a great spot to either to get on Boston outright and to get on them at +1.5. It feels wrong, doesn't it? It feels wrong to have the Sixers favorite here, so I think that I'd be looking at that pretty considerably. 217.5 the total. Let's look at point guards. Markel Fultz is at 4,400. Not ready to go in on Fultz in cash at all, with the limited minutes and the reserve role. That's not for me. He did score a point per minute in the last game, but you're going to need 24, 25 minutes out of him to do that. I'm not really sure that that's going to be the case for Fultzy over in this game. Bayless at $4,000. He played significant minutes in the last game. I'm okay with him with the tournament. As for Kyrie at $9,000, really good opportunity for Kyrie to put up some good numbers here. A little bit disappointing in his last one, putting up 32, but was good in the opener. At $9,000, I'm fine with Kyrie in both cash and tournaments. TJ McConnell, the other point guard, not really happening there either, I don't think. Shooting guards, JJ Redick at 4,700. I don't think the upside's really there. I don't think the reliability is there, so that's a no from me. Whereas Marcus Smart is probably getting priced out of it now. 6,600 for Smart. He did have 32 in that last game the Celtics played against the Bucks, but at 6,600, that probably puts him just out of consideration. And Jaylen Brown at 62, probably the same thing. Look, he was better in game one versus game two. But 6,200, it's just taking so much of your upside away, and I'd probably end up fading him at that sort of a salary. Luau Cabarro and Abdul Nader are the shooting guards that probably don't need too much attention. Although, I was going to say maybe Luau, but no. Small forward Jason Tatum at 65, much like Brown, he's had a significant price rise, up $3,000. That takes him, I think, out of calculations. I'd probably rather take Tatum just for his rebounding ability. I don't feel strongly about using him, whereas Bob Cove dropped 43 in the opener. He's at 6,800. My likelihood of him having 29 points and 7 triples, again, it's pretty low, so 6,800 doesn't seem like a good investment in Covington. At power forward, Benny Simmons at 77, they've bumped the shit out ahead of his price, mainly because he dropped 46 in that opener, but at 77, that's really aggressive. I like him more than, say, the other guys that killed it early on, like Tatum and Brown and Covington. I would be more inclined to go with Simmons, but 7,700 makes him more of a tournament guy because I think there is a level of failure that could occur here in his second game. Šarić at 51, that's just not happening. And Amir Johnson at 31, well, maybe. Amir might be one if they suddenly pull an Embiid rest at 3,100, he will smash it. But otherwise, I'll leave that alone. As for Joel at 8,300, it's nice. We know he seems like it, but I don't have the balls to go at 8,300 on him. It just feels like it's $500 too high. As for Al Horford at 7,400, Embiid defensively can be a concern to other teams and opposing centers as well. Although Marcin Gortat put up those big numbers against Philadelphia. So Horford at 7,400, he's just constantly overpriced on FanDuel. I'm not really sure why he's constantly that high. He did have 39 in the opener, but 74, it makes him okay, but I don't feel like there's much upside there, and I also feel like there's a significant level of risk. Aaron Baines is the other guy who is listed as a center. Over on DraftKings, Horford much better at 6,800. In on that, 5,800 for Jason Tatum. Also think that that can be used. Jaylen Brown at 55, yeah, a better option over there as well. And Benny Simmons at 75. And I'd probably prefer him on FanDuel than DraftKings. Embiid at 8,000, I'd be more than happy to roll the dice with Embiid at 8,000 on DraftKings. I'm not totally sold, but I think it's more of a tournament-y type play. While Bob Cubb only at 5,700, that works for me. And Marcus Smart at 6,000. Both those guys are not as overvalued as what they are on FanDuel. Same with Kyrie at 8,600. So a lot more value on this entire slate on DraftKings, in my opinion. If we go on to the next game now, which is what we're going to do, that is, of course, the Atlanta Hawks and the Charlotte Hornets. The Hornets are favored by 6, and the total is 202.5, one of the lowest totals on the board. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist missed the last game for personal reasons. The Hornets put out their projected starters. He was not in that projected starters list. Weirdly enough, he wasn't on the reserves list either, as Dwayne Bacon was in both. So I don't know if that means anything. He wasn't listed in terms of any injury or anything along those lines. Michael Carter-Williams will be out. We know that one. Nick Batum will be out. But Kidd-Gilchrist is the interesting one. If he is out, of course, you've got the option of a Dwayne Bacon. Jeremy Lamb gets that little bit of a bump there as well. And Marv Williams and Frank Kaminsky, who we thought would get a bump in the last game, they didn't receive any bump. In fact, they played less than what we would expect in most situations. So there might be some tournament-y type value there for those sort of guys. If you want to look at point guards, Kemba is at 8,000. I think that's really strong against Dennis Schroeder in this pretty piss-poor Atlanta team. I like Kemba at that sort of price, especially without Batum around. And as for Schroeder, at 8,100, shit, that's high. 74, I'd be in on that. 81, I can see it, and I don't think it's horrendous. He dropped 45 in the first game. He could very easily have a usage of 40 in this one as well. But at 81, I think it's just pushing it too high. Julian Stone, Malcolm Delaney. Yeah, Stone did all right in that first game. Had 16 points at 3,100, which is value, but I'm not really going to bank everything on Julian Stone. At shooting guard, Malik Monk's at 3,300. He put up a robust 1.5 points in his debut. I will go out and guarantee that he'll be better than that, but I'm not sure he's going to be good enough. To me, he is seriously just a tournament sort of guy, but especially if we have Kidd-Gilchrist out, he'll be forced into a 23-24-minute role, I would assume. And if he gets hot, he could hit 5 threes, and then the value is smashed through. But that's a tournament-y type of situation. Whereas Kent Bazemore, not good. He's at 4,800 at 18 points in the opener. I think that price is still okay for Bazemore, but it's not going to take much to convince me that he's just not going to get 30 minutes a night. Marco Bellinelli was also red hot. I'm not sure that that continues in this game, but I think the minutes will be there, and that makes him a viable tournament-y type of guy. The Baconator, 11 points in 20 minutes at 3,500. If you want to differentiate yourself into a tournament, maybe, but I don't feel strong about it. As for Kidd-Gilchrist at 48, if he plays, I'm in on that, but it appears like he won't. Lamb at 55, that's a significant price rise, and based on what he did in the last game, he wouldn't have beaten that price. He only had 24 points, but I still think he's a pretty good play here, as is Taurean Prince at 4,800. So they did adjust Prince's price, but not to the extreme, and he still would have beaten that price at his last game's level of production. So I would take Prince over Lamb in this situation. DeAndre Bembry, nah. power forward, Frank the Tank, 4,100, only had 12 points against Detroit. He has an opportunity, but it is only a tournament-style play. Same with Marv at 5,000, and that's really only if Kid Gilchrist happens to sit. How's Big Johnny Collins? $5,000 dues for him. He had 27 points in the opener. I was cautious on Collins. I know that his fantasy potential is literally through the roof. Well, not literally, figuratively through the roof. But I thought that he'd start the season playing 17 minutes a night and Ilias over to get 28. And then as we pushed into December, January, we'd get to 24-24. And then Collins would take over. It's even already. So that means that I reckon by December, you're getting 28 minutes of John Collins. And 28 minutes of John Collins is top 80 for season long. And it smashes $5,000. He beat $5,000 in his debut. Still not, it's a rookie big man in his second game with an uncertain role. So it's not really one I really love for cash. If he was back at 3,500, I go, yeah, look, let's get our Johnny Collins in there. But for now, it's more of a tournament type situation. Ilyasova, you can forget that. At center, Dwayne Dedman, 5,000. People were disappointed with his opening night performance. I don't know why. He still had 24 points. He blocked two shots. He had eight boards. Yeah, he was fine. $5,000. I'm okay with that. Yes, Dwight Howard is the matchup, but Dedman's a guy who can stick with those bigger centers. Speaking of Dwight at 7,400, really good in the opener for Dwight, but at 7,400, I'm going to say it's a no from me. The only thing is if you buy into revenge games, maybe you want to look at Dwight here against Atlanta. We know that there are issues there because they literally said, just give us all your bullshit. Give us whatever bullshit you want back because we just want this to get out of here. And that's going to grate against him, but Dwight's probably been hearing that his whole life now, so maybe he's immune to it. But at 7,400, I do think that Dwight should be in your player pool for tournaments. At least Cody Zeller and Mike Muscala shouldn't be. Let's look over on DraftKings and see what we've got here value-wise. In Marv Williams at 44, definitely sexier than on FanDuel. Same with Frank at 43, and I love Dwayne Dedman at 4,700 over on DraftKings. Johnny Collins is also priced better, 44, while Kemba at 78 would be a point guard that I'd be feeling very strongly about, same as Dennis Schroeder at 76. I could envisage a situation, maybe a tournament, where those two guys are both in your lineup and it's a point guard back and forward duel and they both come out with 50. I could very easily see that being the case. So I like that as a stack. Like, you don't normally stack low-paced games, but if you want to stack these two point guards going head-to-head, I think that would be a pretty decent thing to have a look at. 5,000 for Torian Prince makes him a little bit less appealing than what he is on FanDuel. Dwight at 6,700. I mean, on Dwight at 6,700 on DraftKings. I think there's some value there. And of course, Malik Monk remains that tournament-y type of option, given his ability to hit threes that we've, of course, yet to see in the NBA. The next game, the Cleveland Cavaliers versus the Milwaukee Adetokumpos. Cleveland is favored by 2. The total is 210 points. Injury-wise, apart from the fact that Isaiah Thomas and Jabari Parker won't play, we're good. We don't have any statuses to pay attention to in this one. Everyone is ready to go from the get-go. Let's start with the point guards. Brogo, really like Malcolm Brogdon here at 5,500. Played 41 minutes in the last game, only had 24 points, but I like him at 55. I think that a 30-point outing against the backcourt of Rose and Wade, he can really get those numbers going there. As for Rose at 5,300, didn't live up to that in the first game, but this is a slower-paced team, the Bucks. Yeah, I think Rose is more of a tournament guy. As for Dellavedova, I think that he has some appeal as a tournament guy at 3,700. Played a lot of minutes next to Brogo, but I don't feel very confident about that with Jason Kidd. And I don't know if you saw it on the Russillo show today. They had a couple of guys from, I think it was PFT commenter, that tried to do a Matthew Dellavedova impression and get through to Jason Kidd. He actually did somehow get through to Jason Kidd and spoke to him live on air. But that accent, man, that was a horrendous impression. But if for some reason, it is the standard American impression of an Australian accent. And I'm not saying my American accent is great, but it's a lot better than most Americans' Australian accent. And it's just so cringy. It just reminds me of the Simpsons Go to Australia episode. And where all the accents just sound so wrong. Just get an Australian actor in there. That's all that we needed. An Australian actor to play the Australian voices. Not like there aren't any Australians in Hollywood. There are a few of them, and I'm sure they would have been able to do it. Anyway, where were we? Shooting guards. Dwayne Wade, 5,600. A significant price drop because he was terrible. tournaments only for him, whereas Tone Snell, yeah, probably shouldn't have even brought his name up. At small forward, here we go. It is Chris Middleton at 7,700. That's a big, big price jump for him. He did have 36 in that opener, but I'm probably going to fade him in this matchup against the Cavs. And the other guy we want to look at, of course, is LeBron James. He's at 10,900, so it's a big rise, almost at 11. He had 64 on opening night against Boston. You think LeBron's not going to be pissed and want to go at Yanni as well? I think he will. If you've got that cash around, and there's not as many low-price guys to free up big $11,000 chunks in your lineup on this slate, but LeBron is a decent bet there, but I wouldn't say that he's an absolute lock to build a lineup around. Jeff Green and Mirza Teletovic are also players. At power forward, Yanni's at 11,300. He dropped the casual 61 against the Celtics. The LeBron matchup worries me a little bit for him. That price worries me a little bit as well. So I'm not really all that keen on using Adetokounmpo. If you want to look at Jay Crowder, who's a power forward, he's at 5,300. I'm in on Crowder here. I think that he can get that points to bring that value in. I think that's, even though the salary's gone up, I think that's a good option. At center, Kevin Love at 6,800. They made a big noise. Oh, we're going to get him more touches. Like, no shit. The fact that you didn't allow that Ty Lue is on you. Hopefully you do it here. I'm in on Love as a tournament guy. I think that we're looking at a 40-point upside game here for Kev, but it could also go wrong. And the Milwaukee center situation, Thon McCur, Greggy Monroe, Johnny Henson, who knows what bullshit kid is going to pull. So using any of those guys in cash is a disaster. Henson had a big game in the last one. I think Monroe might be the guy you want to look at in a tournament at 4,700, but even then, I'm not sure his upside is high enough to justify it. And Tristan Thompson is not. Let's have a look on DraftKings. Brogdon, yes, 500. That doesn't work. $5,000. Dally at 31. Really interesting tournament upside. While Middleton at 64, Jay Crowder at 47, and Kevin Love at 75 are all fairly strong. Yanni at 10,800 and LeBron at 10,500. Obviously, the pricing is a little bit better on DraftKings. We're taking into account the salary cap, but I like the situation for both of those guys there, especially James at 10,500, who dropped that casual 67 in the first game. Rose and Wade at 5,000 and 4,900 respectively. They do have a level of tournament appeal, but it's a pretty low level. All right, let's move on to the next one. We're going to talk Portland. We're going to talk Indiana. Out of a couple of big injuries that sort of, they're not big injuries, but injuries that came out of nowhere today that I wasn't expecting given what we saw in those games. And one of them is the fact that Miles Turner is listed as questionable with a sore neck. Didn't really notice any of that in his first game. I don't think it's a problem, but if he is out, Domantas Sabonis becomes a real, real interesting DFS target. It's not going to be Al Jefferson, who I don't think he can last 10 minutes on a court. It's going to be Sabonis, who is the backup center. TJ Leaf will get some more minutes. Jefferson will have to play, but it's Sabonis. And Victor Oladipo, man, him and Darren Collison, the usage is going to go through the roof, as is Lance Stevenson. So keep an eye out for that if that does happen to happen. Zachy Collins is probable after dealing with gastroenteritis in his NBA debut. A lot of people, much like Kyle Kuzma, a lot of people were looking to give the old rusty trombone to Caleb Swanigan. And the reports from what I've read is that Zach Collins may already be ahead of him in the rotation. Swanigan in that game without Collins and without Noel Vonleh played only 17 minutes. So, yeah, I think there's a real chance that we see some Collins, but not enough to be an impactful guy for DFS. At point guard, Dame Lillard, 9,500. Just dropped 53 against the Suns in about three quarters worth of action. The Pacers are going at a decent pace. Of course they are. So Lillard at 9,500, I think 50 points is clearly within reach for Dame here, whereas Dazza Collison, 5,600, killed it in the first game. Really, really like him here again. Probably won't be able to do the same level as he did against the Nets going against the Blazers, but yeah, 5,600 is worth it for Daz. Shabazz Napier, yeah, probably not for me. Shooting guards, CJ McCollum is back from his one-game suspension. He is at 7,200. I'm in on him. Happy to use him at that price. Cheaper than Bradley Beal and should give you a similar level of output. So in there, Evan Turner at 44. Nice game in the opener. Only played 25 minutes and had 25 points. So fantasy point per minute is really good value. I'm just not certain with him. I don't think it's a great play. Vic Oladipo, 7,100. In. If Miles Turner's in, as super in as you can possibly get with Oladipo in that case. Looked great in that first game. Put up 43 points in 25 minutes, 25 foul-plagued minutes. So don't think it was an injury or a coaching thing. He just had foul, so he was out there. Other shooting guards, Pat Connaughton, who was awesome in that first game, probably won't do that again, I would guess. Not going to drop a 28-pointer at 3,500, so I reckon you can leave him fairly safely. At small forward, Bojan Bogdanović at 3,700, the ultimate throw out there as a tournament-type guy, can get hot. Played 29 minutes and had 11 points in the last one. Could very easily drop 40 in this one. That's just who he is. And if Turner goes, that's more shots for guys like Bogdanović. And you know, a 7 3-pointer night for him is not out of the question. But you cannot rely upon it. Mo Harkless or Lance Stephenson, they're both at 4,800. Give me Lance every single day. Stephenson had 27 points in the opener. I'm all for him at that sub $5,000 price tag. For the power forwards, Al-Farouq Aminu, who was the starter, did do anything offensively but grabbed some boards. And at 4,900, I don't think there's much upside, but I think there is a level of reliability for cash. It's not fantastic, though. While Thaddeus Young at 6,300, I'm in on using Thad at 6,300 again, especially if Miles Turner is out. Sabonis, 3,800, 25 points in the opening game. So even in a backup role, he smashed that value. But if Miles is out, go all in, go sick on him. I'd be totally, totally fine with him as that power forward. Well, TJ Leaf, maybe, but probably not. Centers, Yusuf Nurkic, 7,900, only had 24 in the debut. I'd probably fade him, to be honest. I think that's just a little bit too high, whereas Turner at 8,700 against Nurkic, a big price rise. I'm probably going to be fading him at that sort of a salary as well. Let's swing it over to DraftKings now. Nurkic is at $7,000, much better price. Totally fine for him to go in on him on DraftKings, I believe. Yeah, Bogdanović, the same story. Lillard at 93, I like. McCollum at 72, and Miles Turner at 79. Much happier with that than what I was over on FanDuel. Oladipo's at 6,900.
Giggity!
Yeah, it's not bad. Young at 58. Both of those guys are probably more in the if Turner is out mold, but I wouldn't completely rule them out from the regular sort of situation. Well, Daz Collison at 5,800. I'm okay with using Collison at 5,800. I think he should be in the mix as well. While Lance is at 5,000, and that takes a little bit of his value away by being so highly priced over on DraftKings. Let's have a look at the next game. It is the Orlando Magic and the Brooklyn Nets. Another one of those weird injuries that seem to come out of nowhere. Aaron Gordon is questionable with an ankle injury. I am pretty certain that he plays, and you would want him to play because there is just tons of value by going up against the Nets. The Nets are actually favored by 2 here. We know, actually didn't talk about this. I should have talked about this at the start of the show. Jeremy Lin is out for the season. I did talk about it at length yesterday. I said there is almost no way that Lin won't be out for the season. Turns out that it was right. So, you know, Caris LeVert and Alan Crabb are the guys who get that big bump. But there's no Lin in this game for Brooklyn. And so Aaron Gordon, if he happens to miss, get your asses on to John Isaac, if that's the case. At 4,100, he is going to have a significant boost. He dropped 20 in the opening night in 17 minutes. You would smash the absolute shit out of John Isaac if Aaron Gordon is out, in my opinion. Let's talk point guards. D'Angelo, $8,000. Had 42 in the opener, no Jeremy Lin, but $8,000 is a lot, and it probably takes a lot of the value proposition out of using him, where it introduces a lot more risk of downside. I'd be okay. Like, he could drop a 50, so that makes him a tournament-y type of guy, but my cash reliability is down. 75 for Lord Alfred. The matchup really suits him. He had a casual 38 in that first one against the Pacers as well. I'd feel better about using Alfred in a cash game as opposed to D'Angelo Russell, given their respective prices. Spencer Dinwiddie comes into the conversation as the backup point guard. Now, he's at 3,900. I reckon there are better ways to spend your money than him on FanDuel as well. At shooting guard, LeVert at 5,700, a significant price rise. He dropped 28 in the opener in only 28 minutes. I would expect a 30-minute workload for him at least here. So at 5,700, I'm okay with using him, but more as a tournament guy, whereas Terry Ross at 51, I would much rather take Terry Ross over Caris LeVert. For that upside pick there. Shawnee Kilpatrick's another guy to pay attention to. At $4,000, it's all right, but he might find himself with 20 minutes in the rotation, and we know that he can get hot. Small forward, Damari Carroll, 4,800. John Simmons, 41. Both of those guys have a little bit of upside. In fact, I'd feel actually okay about using Carroll in a cash game at 4,800. Fournier at 56, really good opening night. I don't think there's much tournament upside, but for cash, I feel decently confident. While the Blue Swimmer Alan Crabb is at 4,600. Had a nice opening night. 29 points in 27 minutes. I'd expect 30 minutes again. He hasn't had a history of putting up good numbers at all for Portland, but it's a different situation here. So I'd be okay. I'm not totally sold on a cash game situation for Crabby, but this might be one of them where I do have a look at it. At power forward, Rondé at 5,200. Totally in on Rondé at 5,200 and a really solid matchup for him, whereas Gordon at 7,500, which is a significant boost to his price. Dealing with an ankle injury, yeah, I'd probably look more tournamenty. I'm not feeling reliable with him for cash. And as I said, John Isaac at 4,100, just obliterate it if Gordon is out. Absolutely obliterate it. At center, Tim Mozgov, 35, played 14 minutes as Trevor Booker got all those minutes, so that's a hard pass from me, but it's a... Actually, if we talk about Booker, I didn't talk about him. He's at 5,400. Had a nice game, 20 and 10. Odds of him repeating that? Limited. So 5,400, I don't see it. But the guy that I want to just really annihilate here as a center is Nick Vucevic. 8,400, had 47 in the opener, and now he goes up against Booker, Mozgov, Zeller, Allen, Quincy Acey. He should absolutely destroy this team. I feel like 40 is pretty much in the bag for Vuce in this situation. Really, really like him. In this one here against the Nets. Over on DraftKings, LeVert at 44 is much, much more sexy. Rondé at 54, Trevor Booker at 47 I'm more in on, especially with double-double bonuses over on DraftKings. Damari at 43 is a good play. Terrence Ross at 43, John Simmons at 4,000. There's a ton of value, and this is a stackable game on DraftKings. I like D'Angelo at 73. Love that, in fact. Nick Vuce at 76. Love that also. I could totally see having a Russell Vucevic, LeVert stack in my lineups. Evan Fournier, John Isaac. You would kill John Isaac at 3,700. You would live and die by him, and it could end up going wrong, of course, but that is... I'm super into John Isaac, as you're probably well aware, listening to this podcast. You would have heard me talk about him 10, 20 million times at least. Let's move our asses on to the next one. We are talking about the Utah Jazzmen. They are taking on the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Wolves are favored by 4.5, and the total is the lowest of the day, and that is 199 points. Hoel Neto is questionable with a hamstring injury. I'm not even sure he gets into the game, to be honest. I think they're happy using Don Mitchell there. Alec Burks a bit at point guard. Joe Ingles handles the ball, and they'll use those extra minutes to go to a guy like Epe Udo as the backup center. Let's talk point guards. Ravishing Rick Rubio, 7,600. Had a decent opening night. The fact that we're going up against Minnesota in a low-paced game, you can talk revenge game all you want, but in the end, it doesn't really make that much of a difference. So I think Rubio is a level of fade to me. Jeff Teague at 7,100.
My name is Jeff.
Obviously wasn't a great debut for him sitting out the end of the game, but he has had a good record against... Utah. I'm in on him as a contrarian bounce back tournamenty type guy. I think that he's a GPP option here. Whereas Tyus Jones, who had those 21 points at $3,000, hey, maybe Lightning can strike twice and he gets those minutes down the stretch over Teague, which would be interesting. But that would make him a tournament only type of a player. At shooting guard, Rocket Rodney Hood, 4,800. And people thought I was joking yesterday when I said that Rodney shit his pants or was going to shit his pants, and that's why he had to run off the court. This is legitimately what happens to him. He had it happen multiple times, and I have read that it is a stress-related, nerve-based issue where he's out there to start the game and just feels the turtle head poking out and has to run off the court and go to the toilet. And that's what happened. I wasn't joking that he had to shit his pants and he had to do it multiple times. He bolted off the court like, get out of my way or these new white shorts are going to be in trouble. So that's a problem with Rocket. Hopefully for the second game, he's more settled. He's at 4,800, but obviously we're looking at him as a tournament play. Same with Don Mitchell at 4,500. Wigo had a decent game, but weirdly only played 30 minutes, and that's completely un-Tom Thibodeau-like. In fact, Butler and Towns only had 35 minutes apiece as well, which was weird. 6,800 for Wigo. Yeah, I'll pass in a slow-paced game. That's not happening. Jamal Crawford, Alec Burks, no either. Small forward Jim Butler, 8,700. Did not live up to that in the first game. Low pace, I will pass here also. Well, Jinglin Joe dropped in 32 at 4,500. I'm okay with Jinglin at that sort of a price tag. Joey Johnson, Thabo Sefolosha, Nemanja Bjelica, and Shabazz Muhammad. Actually, just on a side note, Nemanja Bjelica, by far the most fun name in the NBA to say. It used to be Giannis Antetokounmpo, but Nemanja Bjelica, which I'm probably saying wrong, is now the most fun name in the NBA. not using any of those guys. Taj Gibson, 4,300. I just don't see the upside. I don't feel the confidence in Taj, and I don't see the upside, so that takes him out of cash and GPP for me. Derek Favors at 57. Love him at 47. Absolutely love it. And he looked pretty good in that first game, having 27 points. It is a team where the Jazz can go big for long periods of time, so Favors is in the mix, but not feeling strong with him, while Gorgui Dieng at 3,700, that's really low for Dieng. I would look at it in a tournament in case Thibodeau changes his mind and gives him more minutes over Taj, but that's maybe a 1 in 1,000 chance. But in a tournament, maybe that's all you need to bring home a big amount, and not many people will be on Dieng in that situation. At center, Gobert, 8,100. Let's go Rudy. I'm all for him at that sort of a salary, while Townsie's at 10,000. Give me Gobert over Towns. The Gobert defense on Towns, I think, keeps him at more of a 40-point guy rather than a 50-point guy, whereas I think Gobert, you know, can really get to 40 here against Towns and his pretty putrid defense. Let's have a look on DraftKings. Jeff Teague, love it.
My name is Jeff.
5,600. You have to be all over that. At 5,600, you have to be, I think. Townsie at 91 is much better, and I think he's a better player than Gobert at 9,100. And Jim Butler at 77, much more into that as well. Maybe there's some risk mitigation with Jim, but at 77, I'm okay. 4,000 for Don Mitchell, yes. 4,000 for Taj, maybe. Rocket at 5,300, I'd probably pass. Rick Rubio at 71, also probably a pass. Same with Wiggins at 6,300. Alrighty then, we have got three more games to go before we wrap this up for today. The Sacramento Kings and the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavericks are favored by 5, and the total is 202.5 points. Devin Harris, unfortunately, and sympathies go out to Devin and his family. His brother was killed in a car accident today, so I think the chances of him playing are fairly limited. That would give more of, not to be insensitive, but that would give more of a bump to guys like Yogi Ferrell and Dorian Finney-Smith and possibly Wes Matthews as well. For the Kings, Bogdan Bogdanovic and Zebo are both listed as questionable. Obviously, if Bogdan is out, Bud Heald gets the bump. If Zebo is out, Scalabissier becomes one of your main guys that you want to have a look at in lineups. At point guard, Dennis Smith, they've bumped him up 2,200. Not sure it's enough, to be honest. 6,500 for him. You know, still a pretty decent play. The value is nowhere near what it was on opening night, but still there. While Georgie Hill at 59, I'd probably pass on George at 59. JJ Barea and Yogi Ferrell, two guys who do stand to get a little bit of a bump in value if Harris misses. I love Yogi at 4,100. I'd be using him. Barea at 39. I actually think that there's some tournament upside there also. While De'Aaron Fox at 4,500, he had 23 in his debut game as the backup point guard. At 4,000, I'd say yes. At 4,500, I'm just not quite sure that I want to rely upon a backup at that sort of price. At shooting guard, if Bogdan Bogdanovic plays at 3,200, I am all over that as a tournament situation. I thought that he was going to be the starter heading into the season, even perhaps over Bud Heald, but obviously the injury turned that away. At 3,200, I'd be all over him there. Bud at 5,000, yeah, like it, but love it. Love it if Bogdan is out, if there's 30 points coming from Bud in that situation. Garrett Temple's at 4,000, got a lot of steals in the last game, and that bumped him to 23 points. But his upside is just so limited. I'd consider him a cash play if I need a cheap guy, if Bogdanovic is out, but otherwise it's going to be a no. Wes Matthews, 30 points in the opener, 5,400. Maybe if Devin Harris is out, I look at it. But the fact that he's getting assists now is a real bonus to his FanDuel value. So that's something to pay some attention to. But 5,400, I'm not totally sold. At small forward, at the pencil, Harrison Barnes, 6,300. I think that's a strong fade from me. While Vince Carter, Dorian Finney-Smith, and the Kings' first game starter, Justin Jackson, I don't think that they really warrant being used. At power forward, Dirks at 5,100. Wasn't great in the opening night, but I'm happy to go back to him. I think that, you know, getting 25 out of Dirk shouldn't be too much of a stretch. The other power forward, Zebo at 58, way too highly priced. Sorry, Zach. And Scal at 4,100. Of course, you're all over Labissiere if Zebo happens to be out. At center, let's talk about Willie Cauley-Stein, who had 42.5 in the opener, 6,300. The likelihood of him getting to that level again is probably not great, and the price rise is not awesome either. But at 6,300, I think you should have a decent level of confidence in Cauley-Stein, at least getting to 28 or 29 points. Nerlens Noel crushed at 41 points in 20 minutes. That's, for those of you counting along at home, that's more than 2 points per minute. At 6,200, given an uncertain role, I'd be looking tournament only. It just feels too high for Nerlens despite that big performance. While Costa Kufos, it's a no from me. On DraftKings, love Ferrell at 42, Georgie Hill, Dirk, Heald. The pencil is more valuable over on DraftKings. He is at 57, while Dennis Smith at 66. Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. I don't think he's massively high upside, but he's not too bad at that sort of a price tag. The same things that I said for Garrett Temple, Wes Matthews, and Nerlens Noel hold true over on DraftKings. While Willie Cauley-Stein at 62, probably just a little bit too high on DraftKings, but not without merit. Whereas Bogdan Bogdanovic is priced at 45, and that takes away, to me, even his tournament upside. Let's move on to the second last game of the day for Saturday, and that is the Golden State Warriors and the New Orleans Pelicans. The Warriors are favored by 8.5, and the total is a big 222.5. Not the biggest of the day. That goes to Portland, Indiana. We had Draymond Green ruled as doubtful after his MRI results came back negative, but during the day, he was upgraded to probable, as was Andre Iguodala. He is probable also, while Omri Caspi has been ruled out for the Warriors. Probably wasn't going to be in the rotation anyway. If Draymond happens to miss, Jordy Bell would be the guy you'd have a look at, who put up some really good numbers and has this great fantasy potential, but unlikely if Draymond is playing, which is what it currently looks like. At point guard, Drew Holiday's at 6,100. I'm going to say no, not in a big way. I'll say no to that. Steph's at 9,400. 35 in the opener for Steph. This has got significant blowout potential. I think that Steph is a tournament guy, and that's about it. Ian Clark revenge game? Probably not. But 3,100, don't discount Clark as a tournament guy. We know he has those weird get hot nights where he could drop a 24 or 25 pointer at 3,100, and that would be important. At shooting guard, Etuan Moore at 45. I have no reliable consistency from him. Yeah, maybe a tournament upside, but even that, not feeling great. 7,000 for Clay. Much like Steph, let's put him as a tournament guy. While Uncle P, while he was good in that first game, having his 24 points, I think the likelihood of that repeating at a $700 increased price tag takes him down to your fifth tournament type lineup sort of a player. Pat McCaw, Jordan Crawford. Yeah, McCaw's value is sapped with Iguodala likely back. As for Iguodala, 4,300, I don't feel great about that. Kevin Durant at 96. I feel better about Durant in tournaments than I do for Clay and Curry. For cash than I do for Clay and Curry, but I'm not totally sold, but I think that he is usable there. Tone Allen, Dante Cunningham, Darius Miller, well, that is just a cornucopia of feces. At power forward, Tone Davis, 10,900, had really good record against the Warriors. He's averaging 63 the last three times they've played. I'm okay with him. Probably lean more tournament-y. We know they're going to play him a shit ton of minutes. Same with Boogie, who had 60 in the opener. He's at 11,100. I would probably lean Davis here, the $200 savings, and the fact that he does tend to go a little bit better against the Warriors, but both of these guys are clearly in play. As for Draymond at 8,400, sorry, mate. And center, talked about Boog already. Zaza, JaVale, no. On DraftKings, let's look at Drew at 6,100. A little bit of upside there, but I don't feel great. Etuan Moore, a tournament. Boog at 10,400 is really, really good, I think, on DraftKings. While Davis at 10,600 still has value. While Steph at 8,800, I'm there for that on DraftKings. I think that actually has a level of cash value. Clay at 65, I just don't feel like I can take Clay outside of tournaments really anywhere. Draymond, 7,300, more appeal, but I'm still not sold. And Durant at 96, the same sort of stuff that I talked about with him over on FanDuel. We've got one more game to get through now, and that is the Los Angeles Lonzo Balls versus the Phoenix Suns. This is is it possible to go negative points? Because I feel like that both of these teams are going to lose this one by 40. I know it's impossible, but that's just the way it feels. Devin Booker left last game with a leg cramp. There is zero chance that he misses. Tyler Ulis is questionable with a quad contusion. Jared Dudley was off the injury report, so he should be ready to go, while Alex Len has been upgraded to probable. What the hell do we do with Marquese Chris? That's the big question, which we'll talk about in a sec, but we'll start with the point guards. Lonzo at 6,800. Yeah, look, it's a good opportunity for him here. So as a tournament, yes, but that's too high. Eric Bledsoe was disappointing in the first game, but we've got a great opportunity here. So I'm all for Bledsoe in a tournament. Tyler Ulis, Tyler Ennis, Alex Caruso, yeah, nah. Shooting guard Devin Booker, 6,700. A great team for him to play against. So I'm okay with using Booker here. I think that there is some cash value and there's great tournament value, but I'd be okay with looking at him in cash. Jordy Clarkson at 47. I'm okay with Clarko as well, especially with KCP out. I think that Clarkson has a level of value while Troy Daniels is not really for me. Small forward Joshy Jackson, 4,800. Definitely let people down in that first game. It's really hard to rely upon rookies all the time. I think more you want to look more tournamenty. TJ Warren at 52, I'm not really feeling great about him either. While Brandon Ingram at 58, that's just way too expensive. I don't want anything to do with Ingram at that price, nor do I want it to do with Luol Deng, who is the starter apparently. Let's look at Chris. He's at $4,000. He played 12 minutes. He was out of the rotation. He is a bad basketball player. He might become good. I don't see it. If the minutes are there, he will just smash through that value. No problem whatsoever. Smash through it. But I don't feel confident, especially with Alex Len coming back. I think we could be in for a limited minute Marquise Chris sort of a day. So I would look at him in a tournament, but that's it. I have no confidence in cash, and I have no confidence that he plays those minutes in a tournament. I've no confidence. Dragan Bender at 3,000. Sign me up. Tournament, 16 points, value, bang, done. I'm okay with him there. Julius Randle at 63, well, you know what I'm going to say there. While the MVP, Kyle Kuzma at 4,800, that's going to be, it's going to be a tournament one, actually, because this might be a situation that he can go off on a team that's of equal talent level to his own. At center, Alex Len, 41, in on this one. I think that Len at 4,100 can have a big game if he's ready to go and given minutes by Earl Watson, but it's Earl Watson, so dumb shit just happens all the time, and that does worry me, but I'm in on Len, especially for GPPs. Brookie Lopez at 74, I feel like that's as rock solid as it gets. In on him as well. Andrew Bogut, probably don't need me to tell you that I'm not in there. On DraftKings, Joshy Jackson at 47 tournaments. Brook Lopez, really smashed that. 6,500, love it, love it, love it. Bledsoe at 74, more tournament. Ingram at 52. Nance at 43, really do like that on DraftKings. And how about, I didn't even see Nance on FanDuel. He's at 49, love it on FanDuel as well for both those guys. Randle out, Booker and Len, I'm in. And Jordy Clarkson at 44 is also a good option. 4,800 for Marquise Chris on DraftKings. Yeah. Tournament, but the upside is taken away a little bit by that pricing that sits over there. Now, for all you guys playing on the Aussie sites, if you can't crack 380 on Moneyball, I don't think you're really trying. Jason Tatum is at $4,000. Come on. Johnny Collins is at $3,000. Caris LeVert's at 37. Joshy Jackson's at 35. Jaylen Brown's at 41. Stan Johnson's is at 35. Dwayne Dedman at 4. Aaron Gordon at 53. Jeremy Lamb at 45. I don't even need to go on. Ben Simmons at 6,000. Thad at 4,600. John Isaac at 3,000. Brogdon at 53. Middleton at 55. Hollis Jefferson at 49. Torian Prince at 45. Marcus Smart at 52. You can smash that. You could make a lineup that scores 300 points and have $20,000 left over, I feel like. 400 should be definitely what you're aiming for. There is value all over the place on Moneyball. On DraftStars, it's not quite as aggressive, but I love Trevor Booker there on that site. Jared Bayless, Yogi Ferrell, Terry Rozier, Lamb, Oubre, LeVert, Brogdon, Hield, Rose, all really good cheapish type options. Love D'Angelo Russell, Terry Ross, Marcin Gortat, Benny Simmons and Stan Johnson, also some value, and DeMarcus at a bit under 20,000, and Vooch at 14,000, really get it going for me, as does Johnny Wall at 18,000 over on DraftStars. All right, that does it for today's podcast. A reminder for those of you who have just joined me during the regular season, there will not be a Saturday and Sunday podcast for the first time in 5 seasons. I won't be doing this show 7 days a week. I know that disappoints many of you, but I did have to cut back that for my own personal sanity, for my own ability to have somewhat of a life and avoid some level of burnout. So Saturdays and Sundays, unless something major happens where I might do a quick 5 minute, it might be a Periscope. It might be a quick podcast. Otherwise, I won't be doing a podcast, but you'll get all the projections, of course, over on Basketball Monster. You'll get all of the write-ups over on Basketball Monster. And of course, I'll be getting smashed with Twitter questions all day as usual. And that is at @RedRock_Beeble. Subscribe to this podcast and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, on Google Play, on TuneIn, on Stitcher, and on Spotify. Check out LockedOnFantasyBasketball.com as well. And of course, Basketball Monster. I will catch you guys on Monday, which will be after the Sunday games. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Carmelo Anthony.